Hey Joey.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I have a question to get our conversation started today, and here's what it is. If your truest self was getting dressed today, what would you be wearing? Your biggest, brightest, truest, most authentic self.
Oh wow, this is a really good question. So I would start off with the most like flowy, wide, long skirt. One of the ones that like come in tight at the hips though, so it's like cute on the hips or like the waist, and then it
Right.
flows out and gets bigger and bigger as it goes down. And then maybe like a cute crop top. And also my impending inevitable manifesting large beard.
Yes, yes.
A full New York beard. And obviously you can't leave out like some Fenty highlight
All right.
contouring too.
Okay.
And the skirt has a bunch of flowers, maybe like hibiscus.
Okay. Like pink? Red?
Reddish,
Okay.
yeah, like some nice red. Hibiscus grows like all over Jamaica. So yeah, that just for me, that's I always see that as like the people's flower, regardless of like what level of wealth or non-wealth you have. Is the poor people's flower, you know?
You can
It's
pick a
beautiful.
hibiscus,
Yeah,
yes.
hibiscus just grows. You don't have to pay a lot, and it's abundant in Jamaica.
I wish that people who are listening could see that you are smiling. Huge, this huge smile describing this outfit.
I love investing in how I look, and because that's a huge expression of like who I am as a GNC, a gender non-conforming non-binary trans person, and as just like a Jamaican immigrant, you know. And that's how I've grown up seeing my great aunts, you know, they're always wearing these like long flowy gigantic skirts, and that's where I come from. So picture also Nanny of the Maroons,
Got
sort of.
it. Got it.
Yeah.
Well, I am thrilled to be able to sit down with you and talk to you some about your work over the last year, but also just about what's next for you. I feel like you've been planting seeds in so many different ways, and so it's just nice to have a minute to bring into naming all of those things you've been tending this year. It's hard to believe, but you just moved to Asheville last August, and you moved here to work as the sexual violence prevention fellow at Our Voice. And one of the things that I feel lucky to have watched is you to really create, to conceptualize and to create what became a series of Black healing circles for the community. And I wanted to hear a little bit about how that idea emerged, and then also how you've integrated healing and restorative justice into that work.
Yeah, so the whole Black healing circles came out of my own. So a lot of my I'm a community organizer, and I'm experiencing and fighting for my own liberation as I'm organizing. And as someone who actively organizes from a prison abolitionist lens, and also a survivor of childhood sexual violence, one of the things that I had to reckon with, because I do believe in embodying my politics and also trying them on to make sure that it's the politic that I truly can put my practice where I speak. And so for me, I recognize that the biggest tension for me around prison abolition, and for a lot of other Black folks, is this idea that like, okay, what happens when these gigantic harms are done? As a survivor myself, and somebody who is constantly living with the effects of sexual violence, one of the things that I had to reconcile was how I was going to fully embody this prison abolition lens, knowing this truth. Of how sexual violence truly affects me. And so I was like, okay, if we're saying that black bodies are not disposable, then what?
Right.
You know, what does it look like to imagine a different thing? And what I felt like was most necessary was spaces where we could talk about this real reality that sexual violence is happening within community. It's an intra-community thing. It's about who you're around and who, right. proximity. And if it's happening within black community alongside mass incarceration of black folks and the prison industrial complex, then how do we not continuously feed our people into this mass incarceration and prison industrial complex system? And how do we also get justice and accountability at the same time for people who have been experiencing real harms, especially like black women, black femmes, and black gender nonconforming folks?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where that idea emerged from, is opening myself up to try to wrestle with and create alternatives for how we can actually address real harm when it's being done within our communities, and also hold that politic of not disposing of black people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been incredible to just to witness like this idea emerge as like, how do we respond to violence without more violence?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I love hearing a little bit about the Black Healing Circles as they emerge, because to me, it represents such an out of the box
mm-hmm.
intervention that can yeah. come from community rape crisis mm-hmm. centers.
Yeah. And one of the things I had to sort of, when I first came in to start working at Our Voice, which is Buncombe County's Rape Crisis Center, is also the first rape crisis center to be opened in the state of North Carolina. And, you know, so here I was in this very historic rape crisis center, recognizing that there was no work being done around black folks.
Yeah.
And it was almost as if nobody was holding the weight of what sexual violence has done to black folks, especially as an intersection of racial violence. Like, so much of how sexual violence showed up during slavery currently impacts the ways that black people feel about their bodies, the ways that, you know, during slavery, the idea is that we aren't human, so we can't be violated.
Right.
And that still lives on in black folks today, you know? That's one of the main reasons that, like, most black folks don't even know that they've been sexually violated, you know? So that's where we're starting from. That's where we're starting to sort of be like, no, you have agency, you have autonomy over your body. That body is yours, and your being can move, and you can have agency with it however you want to do with it.
Mm.
And I think that that's the premise that the Black Healing Circles move from. It also moves from this... another foundational point that all black bodies have this trauma of sexual violence in them. Mm-hmm. And that because of our ancestry and because of the way that sexual violence wrecked and traumatized our people, that ancestral trauma is still being passed on generation to generation. And you could think of it in a woo-woo context,
mm-hmm.
and you could also think of it in a very practical context as to sort of like, These are the experiences that shaped how our mothers and our mothers' mothers and our mothers' mothers' mothers got to know themselves, and also how they parented their yes. kids. And those things have been passed on and now live within us.
You're really inviting us, I feel like, to shift this focus between responding to particular incidences of harm
mm-hmm.
or relationships of harm to think about the violence and trauma that yeah. accumulates over lifetimes, over generations,
mm-hmm.
over cultures,
mm-hmm.
right, and communities. So it's just, it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, now that you've spent all of this time kind of conceptualizing this intervention and really working this model in Asheville, what's the future of the Black Healing Circles?
Yeah, so we ran a full circuit of healing circles that I co-created here for Buncombe County, and that series ended, and we're in the process of sort of being or seeking funding. The Buncombe County Rape Crisis Center is reaching out to the statewide board for additional funding to continue to like invest in this sort of work. I've also been in conversations on these statewide sexual violence prevention boards in terms of how we can on a state level enact policies and also shift the rape prevention movement to actually center and at minimum include and consider the experience of Black folks.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And that's just like my community, you know. So there are other communities too that where, you know, shifting. And it's an interesting position to be at because I'm also a Black trans person. I'm an immigrant. So there are all these other experiences of sexual violence. One with like human trafficking that a lot of Black immigrants are exposed to. A lot of Black and brown immigrants, to be honest, are exposed to just for the mere fact of not having citizenship. And then also when it comes on to like violence for being queer, for being a queer and trans person. So it's an interesting intersection and it's an interesting perspective that I come in this work with.
Yeah. I mean, it's so clear to me that these circles are just a powerful corrective to a movement that has been wildly exclusive, and has overlooked over and over again the experiences of Black and brown folks. So I'm excited. I really believe it's a thing that can really start to pop up and thrive in lots of communities. One of the things that the Zedek Fellows did recently was gather together, make food, tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you're referencing your experience as an immigrant, and specifically an immigrant from Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about how Jamaica lives in you. Even as somebody who's not on the island in this very moment, it's so clear to me from sharing space with you over the last year that Jamaica is in you. And I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I feel like Jamaica lives in me on the day-to-day from my language, my culture, music, the ways that I relate to folks here. And I also just hold sort of like this dual frame of reference, even as a community organizer in the U.S. I'm constantly carrying my folks from Jamaica with me. One of the most recent things that I've been a part of is developing this artistic diasporic project with two other Southern Black folks in the U.S. called Fiber and Fern. And it's this moment or collective in essence, document the existence of Black queer people throughout the diaspora. And what it looks like is sort of gathering folks from different parts of the diaspora and meeting up in a specific location. Our founding location is in Jamaica. So the first cohort will sort of be heading to Jamaica to do the first sort of story share residency there. And I think that our collaboration with Trans Wave, which is the trans organization in Jamaica right now, has been one that's been interesting because it's almost like when I look back at my time growing up in Jamaica, I've always been genderqueer. And it had never crossed my mind. Like nobody had ever accused me of being genderqueer or even sexuality wise or anything like that. And so I don't have any specific direct experience of being a queer and trans person. It's interesting because I was very visibly that way, but the framework is just not the same.
It's paradoxical. Something.
Yeah, because I was at times, even in my childhood, completely passing as multiple genders at different times in my life.
So is it like you were authentically you, but it could be healed?
Yeah, and it was just sort of like, and I do think that there are certain privileges that come with being younger. You know, folks are sort of like, you're just a kid. And you know, I remember growing up, my family would call me a tomboy. And also, it's this experience of sort of like, I know Jamaicans are sort of framed in this very homophobic, transphobic context, but more recently, I've been doing some work with some Black trans folks in rolling out a documentary, which was a documentary of me coming out to my Jamaican family. And honestly, that was such a great experience. Mm-hmm. It was an experience of sharing a part of myself with my family and having them sort of be curious about who I am and what it means. And also having them ask real questions out of concerns for me and my safety and knowing what it means to already exist as a Black person, and knowing that, you know, like my family members, elders, specifically my most immediate family, you know, they care. And though they aren't queer, they aren't trans, they're just coming to understand a lot of this language, it was sort of an experience that bucked up against that dominant narrative that there is about Jamaican folks, or about like poor Black folks, about immigrant Black folks, that they can't accept or can't understand what it is to be queer and trans.
It's interesting because as you're describing this Fiber and Fern Fellowship, this emerging project you're tending, I'm starting to see this bigger work happening wherein the gathering of people together in different locations starts to disrupt the stories that are told about places, the stories that are told about Black queer folks throughout the diaspora versus letting people articulate the truth as they have lived it themselves. Yes. Like, which is deeply transformative work. I think it's interesting because as you talk about your family, I'm thinking about, it's not only deeply transformative work for individuals, it's transformative work for families, it's transformative work for nations, it's transformative work for communities, right? Because I think it's a struggle when stories are told about us that do not resonate with who we are. There's a way that we kind of buy them, buy into them, even as they don't even feel true.
Yeah. I had you know, lots of fear prior to coming out to my family as trans. I had a lot of fear because that was the narrative I was told that, like, and to an extent there is truth, you know, and there is space for multiple truths. So Black trans folks in Jamaica do experience heavy violence, especially when you're looking at Black trans femmes and trans women. They experience lots of violence in Jamaica, and it's not much different than the violence that they experience in the U.S.
Right.
You know, I think the U.S. tends to have this very imperialist sort of view. You know, like, that's a third world country. Right. They're backwards. We need to go in and shift shift the context of sexuality or gender or diversity there.
Because it's figured out. We got it figured out.
Exactly, right? And I'm like, the times that I've gotten assaulted for my gender presentation walking on the streets have been in the U.S. Those I've never gotten assaulted. I've been back to Jamaica since and I've, you know, flaunted my gender in different ways, but I've never gotten assaulted in Jamaica personally. So that's what I'm saying, like, there's multiple stories happening, and I think that's a piece of my commitment to this world and to building this liberation is to amplify the multiplicity of stories and the multiplicity of experiences that Black folks, especially Black queer and trans folks, are experiencing.
It's wild because we've talked about your work as an activist and as an organizer. I mean, we've talked about your work really as a medicine maker through the creation of the Black Healing Circles. Mm-hmm. We've talked about your work as a community builder in terms of bringing this fellowship together. But the other part, I think this other big part of your work is your work as an artist and specifically as a filmmaker. And you're referencing your film about your own family, but you've also dreamt up this new venture called House of Pinnacles. I just saw some of your materials today, and they are gorgeous.
Yes.
But it is both a production and training program. We're dancing as we're talking, celebrating House of Pinnacles launch. But this is a production and a training program, and I'm interested if you could share a little bit about why you created a program that's a hybrid venture.
Yeah, so I came into film through, I guess this is a piece of how I identify also as a medicine maker, is that as I'm going through this life and as I'm trying to survive and to thrive and to make this liberatory world that that Black folks and Black queer and trans folks can exist and thrive in, I have to figure out ways to process the things that are happening. And that's a lot of, it's like, that's how my artistry overlaps with medicine, because that's the thing that heals me. That's the thing that keeps me going, is my ability to create. And When I first started with film, the thing that I knew was that I am a storyteller.
Mm.
That is in my blood. My name is Joey Lou Shakur. Lou comes from Miss Lou, Louise Bennett Coverley, the poet laureate of Jamaica. She is a phenomenal storyteller. It is so much of the essence that I walk through this world with. And Miss Lou would gather folks sort of around in large public spaces and just tell stories, you know? And that just lives in my blood. That's a part of how Jamaican folks gather. That's a part of how Black folks gather. And so I entered it knowing I was a storyteller, and I knew I didn't have any technical skills. I didn't know anything about film, and I couldn't afford to go to film school. And so what I did was I took to YouTube. And from watching videos and borrowing cameras, borrowing different pieces of equipment, and just spending so much time developing that craft, and as my most recent mentor sort of refers to it, as developing this spiritual practice of film. Beautiful. And it's taken me to the point of growing so much. To be able to tell my own stories and to uplift the stories of other folks. And so House of Pentacles came out of this, one, this need to create and to tell stories, and two, this recognition that even as a Black trans person who has managed to finish a college degree and do all the things that they tell you you're supposed to do in society to be able to take care of yourself and just provide for your basic needs, After I finished college, was sort of in a position of, I was unhireable. I was unhireable as a Black trans person. No, I would submit applications, hundreds of applications. And whenever I would show up, I would just get turned away or just be treated nasty. And so there was also this need for economic stability and to provide a way for myself, and for my family. You know, I come from a family of immigrants, and there's a whole line of stuff that goes along with that. And House of Pentacles, the vision for that was, how do we do or create such an economic intervention in the lives of Black trans folks that they can reclaim this bodily autonomy, reclaim this life of taking care of themselves, and not be so dependent on trying to pimp their struggle on like GoFundMe campaigns, right? Because this world is brutal. You know, this world is brutal. They're asking us to sort of explicitly name out all these terrible things and relive these different traumas in order for us to get just
like
a penny
disaster
to survive.
Porn, yeah, right? Exactly. It's like suffering porn. Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of like, no, like, where is the dignity that we are entitled to? And so the House of Pentacles, the way it's sort of set up is for Black trans folks to be paid, sort of a stipend based, to engage with and develop this craft of film. And along with that, the house is a production house as well. So the house is producing media, which is also opportunities for the folks who are the trainees to be employed and to get hands-on experience with being on actual productions, and also to develop their own personal portfolio. Mm. Along with that, House Pentacles also leverages the brand and the production house name to get folks gigs outside of the house, so that they don't have to be dependent on the house, because we're not trying to duplicate these just unhealthy power dynamics either. The point of it is to give Black trans folks the things that they need to be successful. Mm. Give them the skills. This is a specific skill set that, one, you know, is a direct intervention in the lives of many Black trans folks in terms of, oh, now I have a skill that I can use, not only to make money and to pay my bills, but it's also a way to shift what workplace environment looks like for Black trans folks. So even if you do afford to get a job, it's tough being existing in a different work environment. House of Pentacles is a work environment.
Right.
You know, it's a work environment of other Black trans comrades. And so at the very minimum, you expect that, you know, certain bullshit you don't have to think about,
right.
Or don't have to spend as much time on in the workplace. You don't have to spend as much time on anti-Blackness, as much time on transphobia and all of that. You can live in your full authentic self in this space. And that sort of autonomy, to create a separate work environment and to work for yourself.
Yes.
Is just
mind-blowing.
World
changing.
Yeah. It changes the complete trajectory of somebody's life. And it's also a step up to a step towards Black trans folks to be like, hey, we believe that you deserve to have your needs met, and we deserve, yes. You deserve to have this equipment. You deserve to be invested in, be developed professionally, and you deserve to be treated with respect and dignity as you're matriculating your workplace and fueling your passions. Mm. And you deserve to not have the stories you tell be filtered. You shouldn't have to filter out your racial pride. You shouldn't have to filter out being a trans person in yourself. So the stories that we create also focus on sort of like saturating this film and media market with stories of Black trans folk. Because here's the thing. At the end of the day, Black trans folks are always going to be written out of history. Regardless of how much we create the new worlds, we're constantly written out of history. Think of Stonewall, you know? Like,
right.
People have to fight for Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, for any of our folks to get the credit that they deserve. And so now...
Year after year. Yeah, the story doesn't change.
Yeah. And so House of Pentacles is also saying, I bet... we'll tell our own stories then, bit, you know, like that's how, you know, if that's how it rolls, then we will develop the skills that we need to tell our own stories, because we can't trust other folks to do so.
You are describing a venture that is fundamentally, like, when I imagine what the core and the center of it is, it's thriving. Mm-hmm. It's like the thriving of yourself and your community and your beloveds.
Yeah.
And it's, to me, it so speaks to this thing that I know to be true about you, which is that everything you do, from the Black Healing Circles to Fiber and Fern to House of Pentacles, is deeply imbued with this sense of love for community.
Yes.
And I, just as we're kind of wrapping up our conversation, I feel like we could talk for so long.
Yes.
But the place that I really kind of want to leave our conversation today is to ask you, what's bringing you joy lately, and what's feeding your spirit so that you approach all of these strands of work with such heart?
Mm. Ooh, that's a good one. I think at the end of the day, my spirit is fed, and I thrive by seeing other Black folks thrive. Like, that's the thing that wakes me up every day. If I'm even, you know, I battle with, like, mental health issues and so forth, and at the end of the day, the thing that gets me going, the thing that makes me feel like I could take another step, is seeing Black folks, especially Black trans folks, living. You know, so even if I open up Instagram and I see, like, my, like, trans comrades on there, and they, like, posting cute photos and all that, I'm like, yes, I can make it through today. You know, like, it's my people that gives me the courage to keep going. And it's the way that my people, like, responds and treats me, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm also a part of my self-care morning rituals, too, is that I'm constantly posting videos in front of my mirror before I leave the house. So I put on my outfit. Like I said, I love getting dressed. I put on my outfit and I take a picture, or I do a pose. I twerk something a little bit, do a little video on Instagram story. And... yeah, to see the love and affirmation that, like, other Black trans comrades and just, like, Black folks respond, and they're just sort of, like, they're just so happy to see me happy. And that's the thing that keeps me going, because I'm happy to see them happy, too. It's that reciprocity and knowing that I will do whatever it takes for another Black person, for another Black queer person, for another Black trans person to thrive just a little bit more.
Right.
And I know they'll do it for me, too.
I don't think there's anything left to say, Jay.
Thanks.
Thank you. It is truly a joy. And it's just, it's, I await all the things that are next with just, there are no words. Just the deepest excitement.
I keep you fully posted.
Do it.
Yeah. But thank you for having me here.
Oh my gosh. It's my pleasure.